Wonderful. Okay, so let's just close our eyes for a few minutes and allow ourselves to just draw inward. Allow ourselves to just take a break from the world that is racing ahead. Letting your mind just settle down. Not having to be burdened by duties, things to get done. We'll leave it aside for now. And enjoy just being with yourself. Enjoying breathing. Enjoying being relatively healthy. At least healthy enough to hear the Dhamma. Appreciating having this bit of silence. Allowing your mind to put things down. Just a brief meditation. And when you're ready, you can slowly open your eyes. Nice to take a break. All right, so Venerable Chandra told me that you were going through the Bhikkhuni Samyutta and you had sort of finished the sutta with Soma. But I don't know where you finished it, so I thought we'd just start with the new sutta. She said, whatever you do is all right. So for the sake of ease, we'll go on to 5.3 Gotami. So the Samyutta, Bhikkhuni Samyutta, 5.3. With Gotami. Does that sound good? Everyone on the same page? Okay. All right. So this is one of the most beautiful not a beautiful story, but a story that is tremendously powerful of Kisa Gotami. But I'll start by reading the sutta, and then for those who don't know, I get to tell a cool story. And even if you know it, I'll tell it anyway. All right, so here we go. At Savati. Then in the morning, the Bhikkhuni Kisa Gotami, dressed and taking bowl and robe, entered Savati for alms. When she had walked for alms in Savati and had returned from her alms round, after her meal, she went to the blind man's grove for the day's abiding. Having plunged into the blind man's grove, she sat down at the foot of a tree for the day's abiding. Then Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in the Bhikkhuni Kisa Gotami, desiring to make her fall away from concentration, approached her and addressed her in verse. Why now, when your son is dead, do you sit alone with tearful face? Having entered the woods all alone, are you on the lookout for a man? Then it occurred to the Bhikkhuni Kisa Gotami, now, who is this that recited the verse? A human being or a non-human being? Then it occurred to her, this is Mara, the evil one, who has recited the verse, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in me, desiring to make me fall away from concentration. So I'll just stop there. And now I get to tell you the story of Kisa Gotami. Who knows it already? Oh, okay. Right. Right. I'll tell it anyway, because it's a good story. Right. So, Kisa Gotami was was she was actually, I think, a poor lady who was her husband was from a wealthier family, and she was always the kind of person. She was the kind of almost, not quite accepted by the family because she was from a lower caste, or she wasn't, didn't fit the bill of the right Indian woman, Indian wife. And the only way that one could sort of raise one's her status in the in her own status in the family was to give birth to a male child. That is one's, reason for existence. And so this is what happened to Sita Gotami. She gave birth to a male child, and all of a sudden her place in the family of being the sort of the why are you here kind of status, she was suddenly someone who was important in the family. And so this son of hers that she had born was extremely, not only very precious, I mean a child, but also someone who was her link to a world where she was respected, a life that she was respected. And so it went for a few years. She had this child and life was going well. And one morning, one day, when the baby was still very young, she woke up to find that the baby was dead. So this is not something we expect. We don't expect to wake up and find our children dead. That really is not the way it goes. So it says in our mind, we don't wake up and expect to find our husband dead, leave alone our elderly parents, leave alone our children. So this is what happened. It was a great shock to find that her child, her beloved child, was no longer alive. And so she didn't accept it. She couldn't accept it. It looked alive. I mean, it looked the same. And so also when for us, when the shock of something unexpected happen, it takes a long time for our brain to go like, it's happening, it's happening, it isn't happening. You pretend the whole thing away. And this is what she did. She pretended the whole thing away. She carried this child, she put it in his in her whatever blanket that she always carries the baby in. And she went around to a doctor to say, this child is very ill. Can anyone find, can do you have any medicine for this child? And so she, every person that she met, one after the other, kind of went, look, lady, there is no medicine. There's nothing that can be done. This child is dead. But she couldn't accept it. You hears it over and over again, but can't sink in. This child is not alive. And so she goes from one person to the other, one place to the other, asking, can anyone find get me any medicine for this for my son? He's sick, he's not speaking. What's wrong with him? And so as she runs around the streets, obviously not in in her good mind, she meets someone who says, well, there is a doctor. There is a doctor who can help you. He is here in Savatthi. I don't know if it was Savatthi, but anyway, he is here. He's called Gotama the Buddha. Why don't you go and see him? He might be able to cure your son of his disease. So Kisa Gotami, of course, full of expectation, goes to the Buddha and pays respect and says, Lord, once my son is very ill, is there any medicine that you can give that he can be cured? And so the Buddha, as this is in amazing wisdom, amazing idea that he had, puts, instead of like everybody else saying, look, lady, your son is dead, said, look, I have a cure. It's very simple, but I need something. I need you to go and get some mustard seeds. And she said, mustard seeds? No problem, I will get some mustard seeds if that is all that is required to bring my son back to life. But he says that, yes, you please get me the mustard seeds. But there's one little thing. Just make sure that the mustard seeds are from a household where nobody has died. And she said, sure. Let me. I will be back very soon. So Kisa Gotami goes off and she arrives at the first household, knocks on the door and says, explains the story and asks for some mustard seeds and says, sure, of course, we'll bring you some mustard seeds. And just as they come back with the mustard seeds and she says, oh, let me, just one question. Has anybody in this household ever passed away? Anyone died? And he said, well, yes, of course. My father died last year. What? And she said, oh, well, okay, never mind. And so she goes to the next household. And once again, she asks for the mustard seeds. She says, certainly, we'll give you some mustard seeds. And then she checks. And also, may I check if there has been anybody in this household who has ever passed away? They said, well, yes, there was my aunt who was living with us, and she it was just a couple of months ago that she left us. She said, oh, okay, well, never mind. And so she goes to yet another household, knocks on the door, now not so certain anymore, and asks for the mustard seeds, and they immediately agree, and then she checks. And is there anybody in this household who has passed away? And the family replies, well, of course, there's someone who has passed away. It was my father. He died of whatever, this disease. And it was just a couple of months ago that he left us. And so she goes from household to household in search of this mustard seed from a place where no one in the household has passed away. And is that true for us? Do we know any household which has not known divorce, which has not known losing a job, which has not known a child who has passed away, a parent who has passed away, someone who has not had cancer, someone who has a family where, you know, their children have taken up drugs? Can we knock on a door and say, has this never happened in your household? If you knock on, you know, as nuns, we hear stories that people don't tell each other because we're nuns. People, you know, they trust us. They tell us stories that they don't tell, that they don't put on Facebook. And all these beautiful family photos that you see, you know, that they sent to all their friends, us here on our holiday in Bali, us here on our holiday in Japan. Those are the photos that they show on Facebook, but the stories that we hear are always not, well, those aren't the stories we hear. The stories we hear are for children who are, you know, having a hard time, who are on drugs, who are suicidal, parents who are ill, a partner who has been, what's the word? Insincere, what's the word? Anyway, cheated on them. These are the stories that people don't tell, but all those beautiful photos on Facebook, that's not the whole picture. Every family has a story to tell. So anyway, this is what Kisa Gotami found when she went from household to household. And so she comes back to the Buddha, and she's obviously ready to be an arahant. Maybe we are as well. Who knows? You know, these seeds have been planted over many lifetimes, and it just takes one moment of wisdom. And so she comes back to the Buddha, and she says that she comes back with clarity and says, well, I have not been able to find these mustard seeds from a household without, that has not known death. And so the Buddha, I'm sure there's a beautiful sutta verse somewhere, because this is such a well-documented story. The Buddha says, well, this is the reality for your child, for any human being, for ourselves, that death comes undoubtedly. Death comes, and it is most likely going to be coming at a time when we have not planned for it. How many of us are prepared for death coming at a time which we have not planned for? This last week, I've been, we're going on a kind of a tudong, a bit of a cheat tudong. We're carrying our food. Tudong is a hike, like a walk where you walk and you live on alms, and this is sort of an old monastic practice. But ours is a modern day tudong, so I have my nice backpack, and I'm choosing all the things that you must carry so that you're not cold, so that you have, walking with someone so that they have all the right food, that it's not too heavy, that I have my 2 liters of water, that, you know, I've got the raincoat that doesn't leak, a sleeping bag that's, you know, down. Amazing. I'm only going for 3 days, and the effort that's gone in for this, you know, this journey. And I was packing and repacking and weighing my bag and all this fuss, and I thought, good Lord, if the greatest journey of all, you know, death, where we're going to a new life, I can't take any of this with me. How am I preparing for the greatest journey of all, which is death? And if you believe in a new life, oh, thank you. Someone has put the verse there. Yeah, that we go on. Are we prepared for the greatest journey of all, which is going on to a new life, if you believe in a new life, but at least leaving this life and preparing for our next destination. Are we ready? Are we ready? We can't take our down sleeping bags and our nice backpacks Are we prepared though? And what is it that we can take? And so this has gotten me stumped in the last 2 days as I've been weighing and reweighing my bag. You know, what am I doing with my life that is preparing me for this great journey, the journey to a new life? So I will just pause there because it is a good question. And also read what Kisa Gotami says. She utters this verse. It's not just a truth for one village or town, nor is it a truth for a single family, but for every world settled by gods and men. This indeed is what is true. Impermanence. So let me just pause there, and perhaps we can just stop for a little while. This is a topic that we love as Buddhists, but we also forget as human beings that life is extremely uncertain. And are we prepared to leave it all behind? It could be today. So, does anyone have anything to say, or just a reflection, you know, just to pause and reflect that death comes not only, well, never mind us, it's our loved ones as well. We don't really like to even talk about it. Certainly, I think in the West especially, we don't talk about a child dying. It's like unthinkable, unspeakable. Any reflections? There is a message. Okay. Right. Someone says, was thinking the best things to pack in your backpack are virtue, samadhi, wisdom, liberation and knowledge and vision of liberation. Yeah, thank you. Yes, at least even if we can't get knowledge and vision of liberation, at least we put our efforts into looking in that way of going shopping, not for pre-packed, dehydrated food, but going shopping for knowledge and vision of liberation and putting our efforts in that direction. You know, so much of our life is taken up by staying alive, so many mundane things, getting the house cleaned, taking our children to school, getting our jobs done, answering a million text messages, you know, and at the end of the day, we've ticked all these boxes and done all these things, but is that preparation for death? Is that preparation for a new life? You know, yes, sure, everybody's happy that seriously, I'm sure it is nice that they are happy that you pay the bills and that you're not all destitute, but how can that be a preparation for your new life? Yes. I think there's someone who has raised their hand.
Darren, may I ask your name, please?
Hello, Venerable Rebecca. So, so lovely to see you. So lovely to see you. When I was thinking what you were saying and then reflecting on what can we take, and I think what I was then thinking about is what can I give. And in October last year, my mother-in-law passed away, and I listened to 3 death contemplation meditations back to back in the morning when she was passing away. And then when I think about her as well, and all that we can give is just that loving kindness at Meta, and that's all that matters. And when I think about my life, and I'm just chasing my tail, and when I pause and have moments like this and being here and reflecting, the only thing that matters is loving kindness, because if I can just pass that on to somebody else, then that ripple effect into other people's lives, I don't know how that's going to be. And I know when people pass that on to me, and the gratitude and the generosity that's been shown to me through my life, that's the thing that just if I think about my mother-in-law, and the legacy that she left was just loving kindness, and my ex-wife and her family, when they were reflecting on her, they were just saying, if I could just bring a bit of Gula into my life that I can give to other people, have that forgiveness. And that just all comes from loving kindness towards others, irrespective of who they are, what they've done. Because, it's really sort of stopped me in my tracks. And I was speaking to my dad last night, and there's a challenging situation between him and my brother. And I said that I'm going to a death and dying meditation on Saturday. Yeah. And he said, well, what's that? And I said, well, it's just, if this was my last breath, how would I be towards that other to that person, irrespective of how they're behaving to me? How would I be towards them? Or if I knew it was their last breath, how would I be towards them? And the only answer is just loving kindness, for me anyway. It's just really, 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 really powerful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And like you said, it's their legacy as well, isn't it? We are touched by someone else's way of being. They might have not, you know, given you $1 million in their inheritance, but that memory of someone behaving in a beautiful way, it somehow goes into our heart, and we know how to emulate it. We know how to do it ourselves. It's amazing how it has some kind of, you know, we learn from it when someone else has been a beautiful person. Yeah, thank you. I'll just read what's in the comment here before we go on. When I think of death around myself and my child, my thoughts go to hope we will meet again in a next life. Yeah, interesting. Hope we will meet again. That's lovely. Well, nice that you have a good relationship and you want to meet them again. Then it is very hard when someone close passes away, but losing a child is a different level of grief. As parents, we have a mindset we die before our children. I haven't had that experience, but it is a scary thought. Although I have been a Buddhist since my childhood, yeah. So this is something fortunately that we don't have to face too much in this day and age. But even 100 years ago, I'm sure, all over the world, a child lost at childbirth, a mother dying as she was, you know, in childbirth. That was just normal. Cot deaths, you know, infant mortality. It was. We live in really an incredible time where rarely a child dies at birth. A mother dies at birth, but 100 years ago, to 100 years ago, even most parts of the world, or 200 years ago, definitely, it was normal for a mother or a child to have passed away. So, yeah, it's the unthinkable, but okay, so let's go on to the hands that have been raised. I think Jeff was next.
Jeff, may you unmute, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Venerable, for a lovely and inspiring talk and for the contributions. Excuse me for not sharing my video, but I've just come out of hospital after major surgery, and I'm just in the beginning process of recovery. I had a complex abdominal aortic aneurysm, and it was diagnosed almost 3 years ago, and it could have ruptured at any time of any day, and it was impossible to have fear in every moment of my life for that length of time. And although, like everybody else, I've experienced fear and anxiety for lots of situations, I found that, and I can only speak for myself, not for anybody else, but confronted with this possibility of passing away at any time, I lost all fear, and I just found it. It's all credit, not to myself, but to the Buddhist practice and mindfulness teachings that strengthened me every day through it. I then went into surgery with I was told up to 20% chance of not making it through the operation, and a 10% chance of major organ failure or loss of the use of my legs, even if I came out of surgery. And none of which happened at all. So I'm filled with gratitude for coming through that. And just responding to what Joseph was saying about thinking about the best things to pack in your backpack. Before I got this diagnosis, I was a long-distance walker, and I did things like the Pennine Way, which was, including the hills, 270 miles long. And it was a long tudong. It was, and you had to carry everything for that length of time. Obviously, you could come across shops and along the way, but not many of them for food. And so I was surprised. But what I learned after doing several long distance walks was not just about the things to take, but the things not to take. So I would build up a list of all the things I wanted, and then I'd strip away everything possible that was to take out. Because on the flat, it's okay to carry a heavy backpack. Going downhill, it's okay to carry a heavy backpack. Yeah. But going up a mountain is extraordinarily difficult with a heavy backpack. And I just the final thing to say then is that I learned through mindfulness practice to lose this fear. And one thing that was not in my hardest ever long distance walk that I did. The long walk to surgery, and now the walk of recovery afterwards. This is the hardest physical challenge I've ever had. Is just to take in your backpack the precious things, but to discard the things that are unhelpful, because you have enough. You have more than enough to do. Thank you for listening, and thank you once again for a wonderful talk.
Thank you. Yeah, good. That is such a thank you for sharing, and the reality of any one of us. Yeah, but also for us who are still, we still have our legs and still have functioning bodies, to have that wake up with a sense of gratitude and actively cultivate it. Heck, I am alive. I am healthy. I don't have, I have a roof over my head, water to drink, you know, just to be grateful for being alive another day. Just make it a practice, you know, for us, of us who are still on this side of health, this side of life. Wish you well on your recovery, Jeff. Thank you for that message. Okay, I'm not sure who was next with their hands up, but...
May I ask you to unmute, please?
Okay. Yes. Well, I too lost a child, actually, my daughter, about 15 years ago.
All right.
So it was, I can't describe in words how I felt. But it also happened to be a turning point in my life. I was born a Buddhist and was a practicing Buddhist my whole life. But when you face such a situation in life, it is really, I mean, then only you will understand exactly how one feels. So I started thinking about it and contemplating about the death and the life. And I found out, actually, it is not about death. It's that we must never fear the death, but the birth. So, of course, as Buddhists, what we want is to put an end to this cycle of birth and death. But it is not that easy too, but it is not impossible as well. So the only thing that we can do is to do all these meritorious things to, so that we can have at least a better birth next time, if we can't stop the birth in this life. So that we can do, we can try hard and put an end to this samsaric cycle. And also I started doing all these meritorious things and transfer merits to my daughter. That's what I have been doing, still doing. And that's why I try my best to perpetuate the Dhamma in the world. So I'm helping all monastics and all the people who are involved in Dhamma. So that's the way that I go through my life. It does not mean that my pain has reduced, but now it is, I mean, I'm trying my level best to cope up with that. So I think I, in that way, I have become successful.
Sad. Yeah. Very real stories. Thank you. So I think Karin was next, is it? Or?
Karin, may I ask you to unmute, please?
Hello, Venerable. So wonderful
to see
you. I've, dare I say, had the opportunity to think about all of this from a number of angles. Because of my own health circumstances, I've had to look into my own mortality for quite a while now, and it's getting more intense. And I live in the UK. My mother lives in Germany. She's on her own. She's old. So over the years, I've tried to prepare her for the likelihood that the only daughter she has could die before her, which is very difficult for her, and obviously. And we don't have a shared sort of worldview or a belief system that we can connect with. So I've tried to do it just by speaking with her openly about how I feel, tried to sort of destigmatize the conversation and take the taboo out of it. And also in very practical terms, what would it be like? Because she thinks very but the reason why I'm saying this is I'm sort of okay with what might come. I've been able to let go of I don't want because I want this. I don't want it like that. I've sort of tried to let that go. But another person clinging to me when I'm trying to cling. And I find that is my little Mara. That gives me an energy which is not helpful. And so I've had to have the conversation with her to say that I don't actually physically want my mother to be present if this was ever to arise in that way when I die, because I wouldn't want to have that energy around me, which is very I almost feel is this such an unkind thing to say? Perhaps I'm breaking her heart, I don't know, but I almost feel like I have to protect my that moment. Is so crucial. I feel I need to protect that, but I don't know whether that is selfish, whether that is not the right view, but it might be a wrong view. So it's other people clinging to the person that is dying, what that can do. So I just wanted to share that perspective.
Yeah, harder than our own.
Parent here, I hope I haven't caused any of. Oh,
that's really nice of you. I don't know. Does anyone have something to say to that? I mean, for me as well, we kind of are loved ones. We, in a way, we want to control them, don't we? We want them to be happy so that we can be happy, or at least keep, you know, we think we sort of can manage them so that things are all right for us, kind of a thing. But, you know, I guess where... we have such little control. We have such little control over our own minds, leave alone the minds of others. And I guess it's a slow understanding and a slow growth in wisdom where we realize that all beings, they have their own suffering. They have their own destiny. We're just fellow wayfarers. We've met for a while, but they have their own suffering and their journey. Perhaps I am the instigator of their suffering, so to speak. But we're all on our own journeys. Your mother is not really your responsibility. And yeah, and so I don't know. Saying, Mom, I don't want you to be there. Maybe it's a relief for her too.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone else had something to... continue to put. Okay, we'll go on to Rekha then. Did someone have something to say to Karen or? Oh no, it disappeared the arm. Okay, Rekha.
Rekha, can you unmute, please?
Yeah. Oh, Iris, no.
Sorry, I accidentally clicked the wrong thing at first. But so my reflection was not so much on this, but more so about preparing for our own death. I mean, well, yeah, that's also, I think, a bit related to what Karen said and what Jeff said. But basically, for me, I had a cancer scare a few years ago, and things turned out okay in the end. But obviously at first my reaction was that I panicked quite a bit. And then there's this quote that I still go back to from time to time from a monk in the Thai forest tradition, which really helped me. And it's very short. Something that he said during a Dhamma talk that I was listening to around that time to try and find some peace. And he said, how long you live or when you die is not important. How you live and how you die is what matters. If you live a pained and stressful life, it is not worth it, even if you make it to 100 years. But if you find awareness of your body and mind, on your last day, your life is worthwhile. And I just read this and reflected on this before going into the ultrasound where I would find out what was going on. And I just had so much internal peace that I knew going in that, whatever the result will be, I can accept it. And it also helped me reflect a lot on how fortunate I am to have lived as many years as I have. You mentioned how, infant mortality rates and, the rates at which women died of childbirth used to be so incredibly high. I believe I recently read a statistic that was something around 50 to 60% of children died before the age of 3 in the 1800s. And even looking back at my family tree, I can, see those sorts of things. So even just having survived as long as I have and getting to live every day, I started appreciating every moment so much more and being able to be in the moment so much more. So as much as I know that thinking about our own death can be daunting for a lot of people, I think there are so many positive qualities that can come from it if you approach it from the right angle. And yeah, also reflecting on how fortunate I was to come in contact with the Dhamma to be able to look at things this way. But I would say that I had one professor who I first kind of got introduced to Buddhism through. And he actually said that our own death is not the biggest or the scariest thing that we have to face in life. It's other people's deaths in our lives that is the most daunting, scariest thing. And I think that is still true. I definitely have found to help with that as well, but I haven't had to face a very, significant death so far. So we'll see how how that goes, but definitely that is something that I'm still feeling like it will be harder to make peace with than potentially my own death.
Yeah, every time you learn, you realize you have something more to learn. So I guess it will just take you even deeper, being able to accept the death of someone who is very close and Wow, anyway, thank you for sharing that amazing story, that it can actually bring you peace and we can let go. It's nice that, you know, like you and I and ordinary people can experience this wisdom. It isn't something in a book, and it's not something for some Kuba Ajahn in Thailand who has been living in a forest to realize, but that someone who, like you and I, can also have this kind of wisdom and peace. So thank you for sharing these stories, everyone. Okay, I think the next person who raised their hand, Joseph, go ahead, I think.
Thank you, Venerable. I really resonated. I just wanted to express gratitude to Karen about that situation with their parents. That could be a situation for me. The thought of me passing away for my parents would be something to take seriously in terms of how that might happen. The future is uncertain. And I felt a sense of appreciation, warmth, and like just to voice that real concern made me feel safe for some reason, like understood. And what came to mind is, oh, how do I prepare for that? That might be a real situation. I might not be in control of the environment in which I pass away in, right? So the thing that I'm finding immediately came to mind was this research on the difference between empathy and compassion. So having empathetic distress. So there's this neuroscience paper by Matthew Ricard and Dr. Tanya Singer. He's a Tibetan monk, but it's been very helpful for my practice to recognize that empathy can lead to burnout and fatigue, but compassion is the joyful wish to relieve suffering. And so not to cure, but to care is what Ajahn Brahm says it. And so I realized that what's very important for my practice in regard to my parents has been a part of what's known as worldly right view, which is there is mother and father. So regardless of how they behave or what their views are, karmically, a mother and father are very potent beings. So I'm trying to practice tending to my father as if he's a sacred fire, regardless of how he behaves. It's almost like I have to work on my perception of my father that's been built up over a long time. That I know, I've seen how my father's behaved recently when other people have passed away, and I need to guard my senses. I think Venerable Chanda talks about that. Guard my senses in preparation for the possibility that of what he might say or do if I'm in the dying process. And so what I found really helpful is just to acknowledge that and to like be mindful of that. The time of death is uncertain, and don't think that we will outlive our parents. So again, virtue is important. Compassion is so important. Caring. And I think what I'm most grateful for is Venerable Chanda's a continuous reminding of guarding the sense doors. I can't remember the name of the sutta offhand, but if an unpleasant feeling. An unpleasant, if a sound makes contact with the ear and produces an unpleasant feeling, one should guard against dejection, unsettledness of mind, depression, and ill will. So I know that if there's going to be an unpleasant sound, I have to watch those. That's the work. It's not that my father, that's the problem. It's going to be these four unwholesome states. That's where the work needs to be done. And if there's a pleasant feeling, if there's a pleasant sound, I have to watch out for covetousness, puffing up or exalting myself, and raga or lust. So I'm trying to remind myself, it's not the contact with the, is that's the guarding of the senses, right? So it's not my mom or my dad who will be the problem. It's how I respond to contact at the senses. That's what I'm training right now. I felt inspired to share that as a gift of friendliness. So thank you. And please correct me if I made a mistake, Venerable.
No, that's really a good reminder. It's not the person out there that's the problem. It's how, those are the things we have to look out for. It's the contact. Thank you so much. I just read what said on the chat. My mom died when she was 60. Her mom was 80. She was at the funeral and mourned her eldest child, her daughter's death. I feel that helped her. In Sri Lanka, mourning in a community, a mourning is a community whole family thing with many people around you. That must have helped her. She looked like she recovered, but we never asked that question from grandmother. That is interesting that mourning is a whole family, a whole community thing. I was in Sri Lanka and I was, it seems to be in Africa. There was a girl was telling me, well, you know who the girl is anyway, but that when someone passes away, that the whole village comes. I mean, there must be something about sharing that whole community being part of the grieving process. So very interesting. I think a lot of cultures, I mean, all of us really, funerals means that many people come together and interesting. Okay, and says, as most of you know, in my job, I get to hear these never told stories about death, just like Venerable Upeka is fortunate as a nun. The fascinating thing is how everybody reacts differently and that you never know how oneself will react before it happens. That is what scares myself at the same time. I don't know how I will react when my parents will pass away or my kids, regardless of how much you prepare yourself. True, true. You surprise yourself in good and bad ways. But I guess all we can do is prepare rather than not be unprepared. So yes, good point. We surprise our own reactions. Yeah. And then Karen says, thank you for your generosity and wisdom, Joseph. Very helpful. Thank you. Yes. And Joseph has the sutta that he quoted. Thank you very much. And it's called Kundalya Sutta. Right. Was there any other hands up?
Yeah, there was. Honorable Sopa, can I ask you to unmute, please?
Okay.
Good evening. Hi. Good to see you, Upeka. I was wondering where you were. I didn't want to ask online, so I...
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, you're back, huh?
I'm back, sort of.
Now, I had a few thoughts while people were sharing. I think mainly you cannot predict how others will react. And when you're passing away, you probably won't have any awareness of anything, but maybe if you can chant, that might help. Or, you know, remember a short chant. That was told to me by a current teacher. Now I'm 80, and I remind myself, yes, I'm 80 now. Hey, you know, seems like I'm in the last stages of my life. Good to know that. And so I better hurry up and get enlightened. But, you know, I'm kidding with that. But anyway, I just think that you cannot predict how others will react. And as far as the clinging, maybe not. I mean, maybe at that moment, they understand something and they're not clinging anymore. There's nothing to cling to. So you don't know. You can't really know. And somebody said, loving kindness is the best practice you can do on the way to dying in the last stages of your life. You're like on the way, pretty much, because you don't know when it could happen. So that's what's my few thoughts. And then you were talking about how the community all come and lament. Actually, I think with the person who's has the loss, I heard that when I was in India. Suddenly, I heard a whoop. I can't explain it. The sound didn't sound human. And I said to where I was staying, what was that? He said, well, somebody died in the family. And she just let out this. And then the village did come. It was, Muslim people. And the village did come. I saw that when I was walking down the road and stay with her around the clock. So, yes, I think it become like a communal or global, actually. Expression of kindness to her. Finish.
Yeah, thank you.
It's about 11 o'clock here now, but I decided to stay up.
Thank you, and thank you for a nice day. I was also excited to see you. Yeah. Let me finish the sutta. We'll finish reading the sutta because then we would have finished it. And then we'll wrap up for today. Thank you, everyone, for your comments, by the way. Okay. Then it occurred to the Bhikkhuni Kisa Gotami. Now, who is it? Oh, no, I read that, yeah. Then the Bhikkhuni Kisa Gotami, having understood this is Mara, the evil one, replied to him in verses, I've gotten past the death of sons with this. The search for men has ended. I do not sorrow. I do not weep. Nor do I fear you, friend. Delight everywhere has been destroyed. The mass of darkness has been sundered. Having conquered the army of death, I dwell without defiling taints. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the Bhikkhuni Kisa Gotami knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. So that is the end of the sutta and the end of our session. Thank you, everybody, for sharing very personal and important stories. It's when you hear it from someone's own voice and when it is something that someone like you has been through it, it makes it possible for us as well, that we too can let go, and we too can go on to the most amazing, important journey of our life, death, with a light backpack and filled with important things. Sadhu. And so I will stop there and let Gunther finish off.
Yeah, not finish off, but it's the traditional reminder, Manoak is better in it, that thank you, Venerable Ubeka, for your talk today, which was based on selfless dana from your side, that you can support Anukampa Project. We have now a nice vihara in many ways, financially, direct debit would be very much appreciated, but there is also a needed items list and a food calendar and also who is living close by to help out and maintain the garden and the house. Additionally, there's a lot of activity this year, so it's worth to go to the Anukampa Project .org homepage and see what's going on and what is planned. Thank you.
Right. Yes, thank you, Echo Kirsten. Thank you all for your heartfelt, honest sharing. And thank you, Venerable, for the warm facilitation. Yes, thank you, everybody. And I hope I see you again sometime soon. It's been really, really feels like home to be on Zoom again with familiar faces. So I'm sure I will see you all again online. And if not, maybe be prepared to not meet again.